Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. A House Agriculture Subcommittee on Wednesday hosted a hearing titled State of the Beef Supply Chain, Shocks, Recovery, and Rebuilding. Chairman Jim Costa of California opened the hearing by saying the topic is an issue of national security.
We don't tend to look at it that way, but I try to remind folks that less than 5% of America's population every day works so hard at all the levels of food production to put food on America's dinner table. And we do it so well, in some ways, I think, that people take it for granted. A lot of people think their food comes from the grocery store or their favorite restaurant. And we know, of course, they may get it at, most of them get it at the grocery store or their favorite restaurant, but it doesn't come from there. And so therefore, I think we've learned that we're vulnerable. We're vulnerable in a number of different ways. And the purpose of today's hearing is really to look at that, to look at the impacts. Let me give you, as we like to say, all politics are local. But my own situation in California, in 2019, the cattle and calves industry in my state were valued over $3 billion, placing them in the top four valued commodities in California. So obviously, like all of you, I have an interest in making sure that our ranchers, producers, our cattlemen and women have resiliency as it relates to the ability to deal with supply chains, fair markets in which they are able to put that food on America's dinner table. Over the past several years, the livestock industry has been subject to three notable shocks, each which has illuminated various vulnerabilities in the supply chain and has created instability in the marketplace. And that's really going to be our discussion today. The fire at one of the country's largest beef processing plants in Holcomb, Kansas, in 2019 was the first event. That four-month closure of this large plant created significant reduction in processing capacity, which led to a drop-off in fed cattle prices. The market's just been very volatile in the last couple years. The next event I mentioned already was the COVID-19 pandemic. As we're all aware, the pandemic had enormous impact in every segment of America's economy, and the beef supply chain was not spared. Anyone who tried to buy ground beef or a steak at a grocery store during the first few months of the pandemic experienced a bottleneck in a supply chain firsthand. At the farm gate, producers were dealing with oversupply and, as I noted a moment ago, incredible volatility in prices. That's not good. President Biden and his administration, I just think, deserve great credit for their hard work over the last 6 months to help America get back on our feet. But I also want to give credit to all of the members here last year who helped us pass multiple COVID relief packages. The most recent one, of course, is the American Rescue Plan, which has provided relief to our farmers, ranchers, as they continue to rebuild, and Secretary Vilsack and his team are, I know, working overtime to implement this relief. The third shock that I think we've got to look in depth, and we're not going to solve that problem this morning, but we have some witnesses who can certainly add some value as to what we might think about doing, is cyber attack. Cyber attack on JBS over Memorial Day weekend. Cyber attacks like this will only increase. Their potential effect on our food and agricultural system cannot be ignored, just as they cannot be ignored as their potential impacts on our electrical grid, on our financial systems, and every other aspect of American life, because in the 21st century, we're all connected. And that provides a lot of benefits and efficiencies, but it provides a lot of vulnerabilities. And our food supply chain, we've learned the hard way about the potential vulnerability to cyber attacks. So we cannot allow food security, which is national security, and the protecting of our food system from foreign interferences to be disrupted. And it's something that I want to work with all of you in terms of thoughts on how we protect our vulnerabilities from cyber attacks. So it's our job on the subcommittee to get to the bottom of many of the complex challenges confronting agriculture and help our farmers, ranchers, dairymen, and women overcome these challenges. Today we will hear from four very good witnesses. I hope you've had a chance to read their testimony, who will tell us where they think the vulnerabilities in our food supply chain lie and their innovative ideas for helping the beef supply chain adapt, and to become more resilient so that we can use what we've learned over these three factors that have impacted us over the last 2 years and create some positive change.
The beef supply chain has recently seen three big events that sent shockwaves through the industry. The fire at the Holcomb, Kansas Tyson beef plant in August of 2019 that caused a market price crash. In 2020, of course, the pandemic, which caused the loss of processing capacity, also absent workers and empty store shelves. And ransomware attacks, the ransomware attack on JBS specifically, in May of 2021. The networks at JBS were hacked, temporarily shutting down some operations in Australia, Canada, and the U.S. The payment was reportedly made using Bitcoin after plants had come back online. Dr. Carrie Jacobs, the Associate Professor of Ag and Applied Economics with the University of Missouri, told lawmakers another cyber attack is likely.
Ransomware is really the nemesis right now. And, you know, as publicity increases and more people are paying off ransomware attackers, you know, it becomes more lucrative for them to be able to do that. And that it particularly is true in the realm of cryptocurrencies. So I think we'll see a rise in ransomware. However, we're also finding that there's a way to pull back. I think, like in the case of JBS, through our FBI and our federal partners, they were able to pull back some of that payment. So that offsets it. But publicity and money, it drives a lot of evildoers in this in the society. And so I do think we can continue to see it, cyber attacks continue to perpetrate themselves.
For greater beef market price stability and sustainability, some have suggested that more beef producers should combine their efforts to form beef co-ops. Dr. Jacobs says there are considerations to the idea.
You know, I think there's a lot of benefits to a supply chain from cooperation, and you know, producers have the ultimate incentive to ensure the sustainability, the security of their supply chains, their livelihoods depend on it. I do want to say, though, however, that the margins have to be there. A cooperative model is not a fix to a market, to a business model that's not profitable, the part of the supply chain that's not profitable. So that has to be there. And that's why I was suggesting that there needs to be investment to help understand what the minimum efficient scale is so that there can be margins at producer ownership and processing, and help in scaling up to that.
Dr. Dustin Aharon, an animal protein analyst with Rabo AgriFinance, says the idea of simply building more small or medium processing facilities won't cure a lack of competition in the slaughter industry.
We have to be able to meet consumer demands in a cost-effective manner. And simply trying to replicate commodity cattle processing facilities, beef processing facilities for some of these smaller initiatives really is probably not destined for success. So I think really investing in research and market research and business model development, understanding consumers and how do we get the cattle that we need to meet that product differentiation, I think that's where a lot of the focus needs to be.
Meanwhile, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association says hearings like this are a positive sign. Vice President of Government Affairs Ethan Lane states the continued momentum we are seeing on expanding processing capacity, both on Capitol Hill and at USDA, is a positive sign. Our news brief is up next. We will be right back.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns live in person on September 16th and 17th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this must-attend conference features 2 days of educational seminars, a live trade show, and honorariums and scholarships given by Western CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Hear the top experts in their field speak on pest management, artificial intelligence and new technologies, as well as the latest on soil health, nitrogen, and irrigation management. DPR and CCA credits will be available over the 2 days. For more information on credits, topics, and registration, visit progressivecrop.com/conference. Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition.
Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Your news brief for today. During a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing looking into anti-competitive practices in the meat industry this week, Senator Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut asked witnesses about the potential of a big box retailer becoming a monopolistic player in the beef market, which is already dominated by four large processing companies. He's specifically concerned about Amazon's recent purchase of Whole Foods. In 2017, Amazon entered the grocery business by spending more than $13 billion to buy the 40-year-old supermarket chain known for its organic merchandise and, at times, its sky-high prices.
By tying Amazon Prime membership to discounts at Whole Foods and opening a new line of Amazon Fresh grocery stores, Amazon has cleared another path to potential monopolization of commerce, and it's on track to double its sales over the next 5 years and overtake Walmart as America's dominant grocer. Is that a cloud on the horizon so far as you all are concerned?
National Farmers Union President Rob LaRue says his group has grave concerns that a company like Amazon could buy out a dominant meat packer someday.
What was once, I think, kind of maybe even laughable or not a vision that anybody could imagine, it wouldn't be too surprising to see an Amazon even acquiring one of the big four in a market like this. And the consequences of that would be devastating. We've seen vertical integration and the impact that that has on certainly family farmers and ranchers, but all the way up the chain, it would have devastating consequences.
Associated Wholesale Grocers President and CEO David Smith is concerned that a powerhouse like Amazon could make a calculated decision to minimize all types of spending on a specific product to maximize profitability.
In Amazon, I think they may have defined it. I think they may have actually came up with the very definition for harvest and invest by leveraging Amazon Web Services to produce incredible income in order to be able to get into the retail business. And so is that an existential threat to supermarkets? Yes. Is it an existential threat to suppliers? Of course. But having so much of an aggregated power with those companies it's a tremendous risk.
Currently, Tyson, JBS, Cargill, and National Beef purchase and process about 85% of beef in the United States. In other news, following the announcement of African swine fever detected in the Dominican Republic, the National Pork Board released a statement to pork producers. NPB Interim Chief Veterinarian Patrick Webb says producers should be diligent about foreign animal diseases.
The USDA APHIS announcement about confirmation of African swine fever cases in the Dominican Republic reminds us how important it is to be diligent about foreign animal disease awareness and preparedness. Live pigs and pork products from the Dominican Republic have long been prohibited from entering the U.S. due to previous FAD outbreaks there. Along with the USDA's increased disease surveillance in the Dominican Republic and enhanced screenings by U.S. Customs and Border Protection, these mitigation measures help ensure early identification and prevent the spread of this and other FADs. U.S. producers can help protect their own operations and continuity of business for the pork industry by remaining vigilant and participating in their state's secure port supply efforts. Visit porkcheckoff.org for news updates, disease identification tools, biosecurity tips, and to create an AgView account. AgView is the pork industry's free opt-in technology that helps producers provide disease status and pig movement data to animal health officials if we were to have an FAD outbreak in the U.S. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention confirms ASF is not a foodborne illness and cannot be transmitted to humans through contact with pigs or pork.
National Pork Board Interim Chief Veterinarian Patrick Webb. Speaking at the U.S. Grains Council summer meeting Wednesday, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack commented on trade issues in the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Vilsack says his main concern is maintaining balanced trade.
The balance that we have to strike between encouraging our own economy and building our own economy and strengthening our own economy without sending the message that we're only concerned about our economy and therefore not interested in the relationships you have to be able to have a good trading relationship. The president is very clear on this. He wants to encourage us at USDA and every department of government to look for opportunities to buy America, and I certainly support that. But if that's all we do and we don't figure out creative ways to have a good, positive relationship with our Mexican neighbors and our Canadian neighbors, it might restrict our number two and number three market opportunity.
Regarding Mexico, Vilsack says they can't take political positions that are contrary to science.
So when you basically say, we just got real concerns about GE corn, we say, well, what are those concerns and are they legitimate? And Secretary Villalobos has indicated to me that they are only concerned as it relates to corn that's used in food as opposed to feed. That's something. So to me, the key here is making sure that we understand we've got an agreement. We know what we negotiated. We know what the purpose and intent of this agreement was, which was to modernize NAFTA, which has worked for all three countries from an agricultural perspective, and we want to maintain a good, proper relationship.
As for Canada, Vilsack says they need to follow through on their commitments on dairy trade.
It's really about making sure that they understand that the tricks that are played, the gimmicks that are played with reference to their dairy industry just can't continue to happen because we negotiated in good faith an expansion of the tariff quota, and we're faced now with Canada trying to be too cute by half in terms of how they're implementing that increased tariff quota. They're essentially delegating it to entities that have no desire or interest in purchasing our dairy products. And so while we have an increased dairy, an increased quota, we don't have a customer interested in purchasing.
Vilsack says the expectation was that Canada would expand the list of potential customers to include food service, which would increase the demand for U.S. dairy. Vilsack added, it's critical people know that the U.S. is serious about the environment. The UN Food System Summit is this September in New York City. USDA Deputy Secretary of Agriculture, Dr. Jewel Bronaugh, is in Rome with an American delegation for the UN Food Systems pre-summit. Dr. Bronaugh says the summit brings the world together.
The goal is to bring the world together to end hunger and malnutrition while we build more sustainable and equitable food systems. And we do that in a way that we can transform our food system so that we protect our climate. Through the Food System Summit, we have an opportunity to really refocus the world's attention on ending poverty and hunger. And it is really about building more sustainable, equitable, and resilient food systems. And I wanted to reiterate that point.
She says the pre-summit is all about building consensus around shared priorities between UN countries.
For the United States, these priorities include hunger and nutrition, climate change, and inclusion and equity. And in addition, we are remaining focused on some fundamental principles that underpin these priorities. And those include one that's very important, leading with science and innovation, also enabling trade and rural infrastructure and investment.
Sometimes foreign events don't always resonate with American farmers. However, Dr. Bronaugh says U.S. farmers are very important in discussions like these.
Certainly, we want our farmers to know that their voices are represented and that there can be a great appreciation for the contributions that our farmers make to a resilient food system and the work that they do, their utilization of science and innovation, which really results in a strong food production system, but also it's really important in terms of how we utilize science and innovation in the United States to make decisions so that we have a safe and sustainable food supply.
Again, that's USDA Deputy Secretary of Agriculture, Dr. Jewel Bronaugh. That's our news for today, and today is Friday, so that means we are recapping some of the best segments of the week for those who missed it, and that's coming up right after this.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Welcome back. The House Agriculture Committee held a business meeting on Tuesday regarding the 2020 WIP Plus Reauthorization Act, expanding the Wildfire and Hurricane Indemnity Program Plus to 2020 and 2021. Known as WIP, the program provides payments to producers to offset losses from hurricanes, wildfires, and other qualifying natural disasters that occurred in 2018 and 2019. The bill would expand coverage to include the Western drought and other natural disasters in 2020 and 2021. Here's Committee Chairman David Scott.
This is an important, critical issue for not just our farmers, not just our nation, but for the world. For we remain the food fabric, the forestry, opportunities, and producers of the world. We're number one in the world in agriculture. And these disasters are threatening us and the world. We've done good work today, and I just want to thank each and every one of you.
California Representative Salud Carbajal was in favor of the proposal.
Over the past decade, California has become more prone to weather extremes, and the Central Coast is no exception. Our community has felt the climate crisis in a multitude of ways: more severe droughts, increasing frequency of heat waves, and record-setting wildfires. Unfortunately, we're likely to see and are already seeing another active wildfire season and extreme drought conditions. Wine grapes are the second largest valued crop in my district, which is why I've continuously advocated for critical disaster assistance for growers who were impacted by smoke taint. Unfortunately, due to a combination of challenges, including concerns about possible smoke taint from late season wildfires, for example, the value of wine grapes in San Luis Obispo County decreased 14% from the previous year and marked their lowest value in the past 5 years. I urge my colleagues to support this bipartisan bill, which provides a vital support system for producers, both in my district and up and down the West Coast, including our vibrant wine community. Thank you. I yield back, Mr. Chair.
Here's Representative Jimmy Panetta of Carmel Valley.
I would like to thank you and Ranking Member Thompson for coming together, for working together, and of course, for putting together a bipartisan bill that addresses a problem that we are experiencing, not just in my district, but throughout America, from wildfires in the west to flooding in the south, to thunderstorms, huge thunderstorms in the middle of our country. Our farmers, our farm workers, our people, and our products are getting absolutely pummeled. Now, last year, in and around my district, there were five major wildfires that burned over 640,000 acres. In addition to the structural damage, these fires had significant impact on our local agricultural industry, including many of our wine grape growers in our district. In fact, according to our recent crop report that just came out this week, the total value of our wine grapes in Monterey County experienced a 43% decline in value, basically a loss of over $80 million just from the effects of wildfires. Now, this is not just about grapes getting burnt from fire. It's all about their taint from smoke. As you know, smoke can blow miles from their fires, spreading across and staying in the fields and vineyards. And when wine grapes are exposed to smoke, of course, it can result in wines with a smoky, burnt, ashy, or even a medicinal taste. Now, unless you're like some of my colleagues here who like that smoky taste in their wine, for the most part, those products are virtually impossible to market. Now, ag producers in my district have dealt with smoke taint in the past. And in those instances, the Wildfire and Hurricane Indemnity Program, WIP, has been an absolute lifeline. Unfortunately, this product has not been active since 2019, meaning that for all of their losses my producers incurred in 2020, one of the most catastrophic fire years in modern history, there was no relief available. That's why in November of 2020, Representative Mike Thompson and I introduced the WIP Plus Reauthorization Act to extend this critical program to cover 2020 losses. So you can understand why that I'm very pleased today that we're marking up this bill and that it will cover both 2020 and losses in 2021. Moreover, I'm very pleased that this is a bipartisan bill that ensures that the payment limits for WIP Plus reflect the high cost of land and labor associated with specialty crop agriculture. This bill must pass, sooner the better, because our producers cannot wait any longer. And unfortunately, fire seasons, or we should be calling them now fire years, are only becoming more intense. We need to be prepared for hotter, drier conditions across the West and a year-round risk of extreme wildfire impacting not just our food and drink, but also our health, our homes, and our environment. And part of being prepared means that we in Congress must pursue every opportunity to ensure our agricultural producers who are on the front lines of climate change have the resources that they need to keep our rural economies going and thriving in the face of these disasters. We are taking a very important step today in that direction, and I'm committed to working with you, the ranking member, and all of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to get this legislation not just through this committee, but across the finish line and signed into law. Mr. Chairman, I yield back and I thank you.
California Representative Doug LaMalfa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it.
You're recognized. 5 minutes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I probably won't use all of it. So I just wanted to touch on the issue with the fire season we've been having. You know, this year it's already terrible on the West as we, as this committee, of course, oversees U.S. Forest Service. And I'm proud to be the ranking member on forestry and conservation with my great colleague, Chairwoman Spanberger. I think you do good work on there, but we just got to bring attention more to what's going on. Unfortunately, it looks like 2021 is going to be perhaps a worse fire year. As Mr. Carbajal had mentioned, you know, smoke-tainted grapes affected the wine country and really anywhere that has good wine grape growing areas. My district has it too. So everything becomes smoke tainted, and it's certainly not great for general health. So we also have severe drought conditions that an overgrown forest actually exacerbates, because really the amount of trees per acre that are sustainable are somewhere around 60, 70, 80 full-size trees per acre. We have cases of more than 300 trees per acre. So we got to do much more about that. We have also with the drought in general, obviously for agriculture in California, it's really on its knees right now, because so much of our ag lands have been curtailed from a halfway normal allotment to even zero down in the San Joaquin Valley. Up in the north part on the Klamath Basin, Sacramento Valley, many curtailments. And a lot of people say, well, okay, it just means less farmers in California. But the crops that we grow are unique in large part to California. Many of them, our whole country's supply, comes from California. At least 12 crops that are grown in California are 99% of the nation's use come from our state. So the drought there and the lack of water storage that we haven't built in a long time, added to it in a long time, really is it is a factor for all Americans. So as water gets cut off, it's going to hurt all of us and all of our economy. So with the amendment that will reauthorize the Wildfire and Hurricane Indemnity Protection Program Plus, will provide necessary supplemental assistance to help farmers across the country impacted by these disasters in 2020 and 2021. So it's an important amendment for what we're dealing with out there and just so much in the West. So I appreciate the time, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and I yield back.
And Representative Jim Costa also spoke in favor of the effort.
It reflects the needs that have taken place in recent years of the disasters that have occurred on a regional basis in farm country. Whether we're talking about, as you noted, hurricanes or floods, are the incredible fires that we've seen in the West in multiple states that have created such hardship for farmers, ranchers, dairymen, and women. We know that folks are suffering and they've been hard hit. That's just the bottom line. And you add on top of that the impact of 15, now 16 months of the COVID-19. It's been a difficult, difficult time for all people in our country. But for those folks who put food on America's dinner table every night, which I like to state as a national security issue, we need to be there for them. We need to be there to respond to the natural disasters that have occurred. They are a reality, just as climate change is a reality that is impacting every region of our country. Let me speak specifically about California, the state that I represent, perhaps the largest agricultural state in the nation, half the nation's fruits and vegetables, 20% of the nation's dairy products, leader in citrus production, and the list goes on and on and on of over 300 commodities. All of these things have impacted California like they've impacted every other region of the country. This legislation is much needed because with the expansion of the WIP Plus program to cover losses in a host of different areas, including our cooperatives, as an example, the dairy industry, these critical drought conditions have impacted so many of the input costs that farmers, ranchers, dairymen, and women have to factor in as they're dealing with market prices. Farming's a risky business. I know. I'm a third-generation farmer in California. And there are a lot of things we just don't have any control over. Market prices, we don't have any control over. The weather, we don't have any control over. And so, therefore, it's important that this House Ag Committee, in a bipartisan fashion, with your leadership, Mr. Chairman, respond to the crisis that is taking place in farm country across America. The $8.5 billion authorization for 2020 and 2021 is a step in the right direction, and we must continue to be engaged. As you noted, the relief that we have had has been late. It's been slow in coming, and that just isn't right. And we've had problems, as Congressman Thompson noted, with our Farm Services Administration, and they're backlogged, and they can't produce the reports that that our producers, when they go to their offices. And guess what? You know, natural disasters you can count on. But I think they're going to continue and be exacerbated because of factors that we know today, science tells us, continue to be more difficult, more extreme in nature. And you know, the old line, don't fool with Mother Nature. Well, we're fooling with Mother Nature, and we got to respond because food on America's dinner table is something that we should never, ever take for granted. Never. So the importance of your work product, your bipartisanship, makes a difference. Our efforts with crop insurance, with Congresswoman Buska's effort, is important. We got to work together with the Secretary of Agriculture to give him the flexibility necessary, as you noted, to respond when a crisis hit, regardless of what region of the country it may impact. And we know for certain that those are going to continue. So I add my support for this overall bipartisanship effort. We'll continue to work together because we know the crisis today is next year's crisis that we're going to have to deal with. So God bless you. Thank you very much. And I look forward to voting for this measure. Thank you.
Representative Mike Thompson, a California Democrat, introduced the bill in January. The measure passed the committee on a voice vote with bipartisan support and will be reported out of committee to the full House. We'll be right back.
Agromayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromayora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromayora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow.
Joining us today is William Bordeaux, Executive Vice President of Harris Farms, a director of the Westlands Water District, and Vice Chair of the Board for the San Luis and Delta Mendota Water Authority. Here's our conversation.
Well, once again, we talked a few months back, we talked about water, and I think the situation has gone the way that we anticipated but didn't want as water continues to, you know, drought continues to get worse in California. Water handling, I'm hearing so many others say that that also is not being handled very well. I would like to get your take on our current situation, especially as we hear that after a meeting on August 3rd, I believe it is coming up, we may have even more farmers losing water.
Yeah, no, it's unfortunate this has become so political. It's hard enough if it was just hydrological. And the environmental community in our state has a lot of power. And I think they are using it in ways that aren't productive, that don't even help the environment. It's more punitive, and it's hurting all of us and the environment.
If we were to paint a clearer picture of that, is there an example that you can give me of
on a wet year, they let all the water go out to the ocean for the benefit of fish, and the fish don't benefit. And then now you find yourself in a situation like this where water is critical for both the environment and for agriculture and for communities. And we wasted a precious resource. And so we're mismanaging the system.
So I hear, too, complaints that even if we had decided to not just send that water out to the ocean, where would we store it? Do you see storage still being a problem in California?
Oh, we haven't built storage for years. It's dilapidated. It's dangerous. You know, Orville almost burst, and it would have been devastating. And so we need to invest in our future, in our infrastructure. But if we're going to not even use the infrastructure that we currently have, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be a very good investment if we spend billions of dollars studying and then building. Maybe, you know, my grandchildren may benefit, but not if they can't use the infrastructure. And so we have lots of challenges that we need to overcome. And the weather is the least of our concerns, unfortunately.
How long have you been in agriculture and in, you know, in dealing with water especially?
Well, most of my life, but at least for the last 10 years.
And I've been reporting on it for 10, 20 years. I'm not going to put a number to it. But during the time that both of us have been involved in this, in just agriculture in general, I know that there has been money that's supposed to be earmarked for improving the infrastructure, improving water storage, or creating, you know, better places to keep our water. I've not seen any results or any end products come out. Am I missing something?
These very powerful environmental interests are smart. And we pass water bonds, but if you read the fine print, it says, you know, half the water has to go to the benefit of the environment. And it doesn't make economic sense for the end users to pay for the whole infrastructure and then only get a portion of the water, and the water's too expensive to actually grow anything economically feasible. And so it's pushing all of the growing out of our country. And so it's unfortunate that we can't compete with Mexico. It's sad. I never thought in my lifetime that we would be closing businesses because we can't compete with Mexico.
Yeah. And, you know, I just don't even know how to follow that up, because it's so much easier and cheaper to produce products in other nations, especially in, you know, to the south.
And it's a national security issue. And I thought during the pandemic, when the grocery store shelves were empty, people would realize that if we rely on other people for necessities, we become vulnerable. But short memories, I suppose, because we're pushing our domestic food supply capability overseas. And so if someone decides to cut off our supply lines, like they did during the pandemic, we will be vulnerable.
You know, and I have seen many, many places online where environmentalists are saying that agriculture doesn't have a right to the water. We shouldn't be using water for agriculture. And I always wonder, do these people eat? But how should we be explaining this situation to these people who clearly don't get it?
Well, it's really hard to get through to people that don't want to understand. And so you're right. They're benefiting from it. And while they're misguided. They may be well-intended, but they're completely misguided. And these days, it's easy to listen to sound bites and not dig in and learn about the real issues. And I think we need to have a more balanced approach to most things, because one side or the other doesn't have it all figured out. I think we need to all work together to come up with some common goals that we all can get behind. And I do think they exist. But when we live in a highly partisan environment, everybody suffers, except a very handful of people at the very top.
Right. And now we're hearing stories about communities that are, you know, running out of drinking water, too. And sometimes it seems that those stories are a little bit more highlighted. And maybe they should be, because it shows an exact, this is how this actually affects families where there's no drinking water. So it's also not just farmers who are so heavily affected by this. This is California, and the people in it don't have the water that they need.
When we mismanage our resources, everyone suffers. The environment suffers, community suffers, agriculture suffers. And so these aren't unlimited resources. We can't squander everything. And we are very successful at what we do as a nation and as a state and as a valley. And so we're allowed to make big mistakes because we have huge margins. The Silicon Valley has provided a big buffer where we have huge amounts of capital that allow us to make bad decisions. If it was a little tougher, I guarantee we'd be making better decisions. But what people don't realize is these are long-term decisions, and it's very hard to catch up. And you can't continue to be making mistakes and thinking you're making good decisions. It will catch up with us.
Right. And when we do talk about the long-term for this, many of our crops are long-term crops too. So when you damage pistachio trees or almond trees now, citrus and all the other, you know, major crops, that especially tree crops, you can't plant a tree next year and get fruit or nuts off of it. So we're talking about affecting our crops today that's going to affect food for the world for, you know, a decade. What can we do about that?
Well, we need to be, you know, managing the system right, making smart investments, not being wasteful, because you shouldn't have to grow the highest value crop just to break even. I mean, we need the ability to grow lots of different row crops because they're all needed. But when the cost of doing business continues to rise and it's cost prohibitive to even grow high value crops, imagine how difficult it's going to be to grow things like tomatoes or watermelons or lettuce or any of the things that we need to have a healthy diet. It doesn't make sense to me that there wouldn't be a more concerted effort to make sure that we have a level playing field where everyone can benefit. Communities benefit through having efficient, effective use of our natural resources.
Let me ask you this from your perspective again. Some people say grow in other areas, move to Arizona, grow, you know, in Oregon, which also is in drought, but many of those areas. But if agriculture leaves California, what happens to the state?
Well, it'll go bankrupt eventually, and it'll reset eventually. You know, their crazy policies will be their downfall. I don't know when that will be, you know, hopefully in my lifetime, but at some point you can't make bad decisions. You can't say, no, we don't want to have agriculture. No, we don't want to have people. We don't want to have communities. You know, it doesn't make any sense unless you're the one that lives at the coast and doesn't want any neighbors, right? That might work. You still have to get your food from somewhere. And maybe they have enough money to buy it from places where they don't have high standards and regulations and food safety and all the things that make California agriculture wonderful. But you can't overburden us where we go out of business. It makes no sense. And I think the general public will wake up to this. I hope it's sooner rather than later.
As we wait to see how water is distributed or continues to be distributed through the summer and through the rest of the year, which is hard to even say because we know there's just not water that the state needs, that the growers need. But what, as somebody in the ag industry, what is your hope right now?
I'm hopeful that the average citizens will circle the wagons and will realize that we all need to work together if we're going to have a bright and vibrant future that includes the American dream. And we can achieve it, but not if we're all fighting amongst ourselves and looking at our own self-interest. We have to allow people to have freedom to make good and bad decisions. And so they'll learn from the bad ones and start making more good ones.
Thank you again to William Bordeaux. The California Farm Bureau says farmers in California and a dozen other states are increasingly selling livestock and letting fields go fallow due to severe drought in the western U.S. According to an American Farm Bureau survey, 85% of ranchers reported selling off portions of livestock herds due to drought impacts on water supplies and grazing lands. Some 77% of growers were destroying crops due to water shortages. Nearly 80% of the West is in severe drought. That's our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to hear about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.